I have to say, thank you very much for everyone who's jumping on board the Twitter train. This is very exciting. It's really, really great. We've picked up quite a lot very quickly. And I have to say, it raises a question in my mind, and that is, where the hell have you been till now? Yeah. Anyway, at RN Drive, it'd be great if you could follow us. We're trying to get to 6,000 before I head off into the sunset. At 10 to 7, we want to talk religion and ethics, and Scott Stevens joins us now because in the context for this conversation really is the continued debate about the verdict on Darren Wilson's shooting of Michael Brown in Ferguson in Missouri. A lot of people point to the hostility that Michael Brown displayed towards the police officer, and if this hostility was present, then did that justify in any way the shooting? But even if that hostility was there, what are the underlying reasons that it exists? What are the causes for the deep-seated animosity? There's a philosophy professor by the name of Jeffrey P. Bishop, who's from St. Louis University, who's written about the idea of constant surveillance that black Americans go through every day, really, in their lives. The surveillance that's kind of born of mistrust and fear, and the effect that this has on both black and white members of the community. Scott Stevens has been perusing all this, and he joins us now to discuss it. How are you doing, Scott?
Yeah, very well, Willie. Thank you.
He begins with an extraordinary, or in his argument, he has an extraordinary story of a friend of his who's black named Carl, which it was actually a deeply shocking one because of the symmetry with which it closes.
Look, it is quite extraordinary. Jeffrey Bishop, who I should say is a dear friend, he's quite extraordinary, a philosopher and medical ethicist, as white can be, though, grew up in West Texas in a predominantly black part of West Texas. And he tells a story that I think for many of us who did grow up, I mean, I spent the most of my time in the United States in Louisiana. We would have experienced the same thing almost every day. Mm. He had a dear friend that he went to high school with named Carl. The two of them on the way to a football game went to a convenience store just to get a little bit of, you know, this is sort of late teens, they are getting a bit of, you know, candy or soft drink or whatever on their way to a football game. And as soon as they walk into the store, the difference between the way the two of them are treated by the convenience store owner is palpable. And Carl, who's his black friend, after a while simply caves in to the suspicion that's in the air, and in a moment of frustration he kind of throws down the candy and just says, "Oh, screw it," and bursts out of the store. And Jeff Bishop says, you know, he didn't quite understand at the time. He thought that maybe Carl was exaggerating. He didn't really pick up much in the air, but and I think, you know, over time he's come to realize, and I should say that this realization has gone through a massive detour through the philosophical and historical reflections of someone named Michel Foucault, this great, very famous French philosopher, who tried to understand the way in which surveillance can become very easily self-surveillance. Let me see if I can't sort of unpack this a little bit.
Well, this is the idea of the panopticon that's often referred to.
Jeffrey Bentham's panopticon. This is the 19th century vision of the ultimate jail that was constructed by the great British utilitarian Jeffrey Bentham. His idea was this, that you would have a prison which was more or less constructed in a kind of semicircle. And at the heart of that semicircle would be an all-seeing tower that would in fact you could see out from the tower, and all those inmates in the cells could always be seen by someone in the tower, but the inmates themselves couldn't see into the tower to be able to see if someone was actually there watching them.
So
in other words,
there's always the threat of them being watched, but they can never verify whether or not they're being watched. They can merely assume that that's what's going on.
Exactly right. And then the moment, the great diabolical moment becomes when no one, in fact, needs to be in that tower for surveillance to work. In other words, Bentham's idea was surveillance reaches its ultimate point, its ultimate goal, when it no longer is external surveillance, so Big Brother watching us, the presence of security cameras, but in fact, we are surveilling ourselves. And what Jeff Bishop points out, and I think it's quite remarkable, the experience of being watched, the experience of being deferentially singled out by the police, the experience of always having to worry whether I will be an object of suspicion, will my compliance to a police request be enough, will I be a singular object of police violence, that ends up working its way into the lived experience of African Americans across the United States. And this then becomes, I think, a really interesting idea. There was a Pew survey, a Pew culture class and culture survey that's been Religion, Class, and Culture Survey. It's been kind of rolling out over the last 3 years. It's been finding some really quite extraordinary things. For instance, that the vast majority of white Americans think that race relations are far too much time is spent.
Yeah.
Agonizing, hand-wringing about race relations.
Well, which we've seen in the Ferguson case as well. I mean, there is a clear, the polling is showing in this particular case, there's a big split. White America seems to not really get what the big deal is about. Black America sure as hell gets what the big deal is about.
That's exactly right. And not only is it less than 3/4 of Americans think that enough time is spent on race relations, in other words, almost 3/4 think that far too much time is given, there's another side to this, Waleed, that I just found overwhelming. And that's the other sort of the flip side that we're not hearing anywhere near enough about, is that when this same Pew Religion, Class, Culture survey inquired about the social relationships, the social networks in which white Americans involve themselves or insinuate themselves, get a lot of this. For the vast majority of Americans, over 91% of their social network are themselves white. Less than 1% of their social network are in fact black. And this it seems to me, gets right to the heart of the issue. Here we have the same nation. We have the same social experience, if I can put it that way. People watching the same events, the same protests, and yet an entirely different narrative playing itself out. Because what's actually happened is that there's been a fundamental breakdown in the ability to empathize. And look, here I actually think, Waleed, that empathy is in many ways actually quite a substantial political problem. Empathy has got to be present for differentiated societies to cohere, for there to be anything like social harmony.
And well, in their absence, what you get is extreme polarization. That's the consequence.
That's right. But the problem is empathy is almost impossible. In other words, empathy is indispensable and empathy is impossible because you can't simply think yourself into the lived experience of somebody whose life and whose narrative and whose experience of police surveillance is entirely different from one's own. And I just, you know, the whole series of events in Ferguson reinforced for me that there is no possibility of empathy if there isn't that fundamental breakdown in the self-segregation that's taking place, where people simply enclose themselves in like-minded groups.
Right. It's an analogy you could use to describe social media. It's an analogy you could use to describe the state of Australian politics, American politics, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. I mean, on and on it goes.
Absolutely.
This is at the core of so much of human conflict. What strikes me, though, is interesting about the surveillance idea, the internal surveillance, is that I think if you feel surveilled in this way, you really have one of two options. You will either become really compliant, or you will decide that there is nothing you can do to satisfy those who are surveilling you, and you're probably more likely to lash out. And I wonder if that's ultimately this part of the story that we're seeing here.
And this is the kind of, oh, screw it moment. You know, what's the point? What's the point? And look, this is the other really interesting thing for me, Waleed. This same Pew survey, when they asked different parents, white parents versus black parents, what virtue, what emotion, what quality would you really like to instill in your children? Top of the list for white parents, self-reliance. Mm-hmm. Make your own way in the world.
Yep.
Top of the list for black parents, obedience.
Right.
Now, doesn't that tell you just about everything?
Yep.
And I think this is really chilling moment of surveillance that you're exactly right. Either you're going to be overly compliant, dear God. And this is actually part of the, you know, hands up, don't shoot aspect of this protest. Mm-hmm. You know, I will do what you say, just don't harm me. Or there's the kind of utter giving in to the counsel of despair. There is no way of ever breaking out of this predetermined cycle that we seem to be born into. It really is quite it's a terrifying moment. And unfortunately, it has lessons for all of us.
It does. And the thing that goes back to that point I made, I think it describes so many conflicts across the world, and that makes it very intractable. Nonetheless, on that sad note, we'll leave it. Scott, thank you very much. Newstime, 7 o'clock.